if there's something novel and new, the brain all of a sudden sees that and says, whoa, 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 what is that? Alarm, alarm bells, alarm bells. And that's, it'll basically feel like a trigger point, but that's what we're looking for. So we're looking for those areas where we scan around and you say, ooh, that's a spot. And it's, you know, it's not pleasant in the moment, but it's cool and it's productive because it helps us know exactly where we need to go. Kind of where's the bullseye of this problem? Trying to, you know, take similar approach that you do with functional medicine. We're trying to go upstream and find the cause here in the musculoskeletal system rather than in the biochemistry of the immune system.
Welcome to Take Back Your Health with Dr. Amy Myers. Today's guest is Garrett Salpeter. Garrett is considered the health engineer. His background is in engineering and neuroscience. He is the inventor of NuFit and has a patent on the Nubie, which I can personally testify is an incredible machine. He has trained doctors and physical therapists from around the country in his method, and you can check out his website at nu.fit. He is the author of the book, The NuFit Method, and the host of the podcast, Undercurrent. Before we get into this week's interview, just a quick reminder that we've created a special offer specifically for listeners of this show on your very first purchase of any of my products on amymyersmd.com. Simply enter promo code TAKEBACK15 at checkout and you'll receive a 15% discount on your first AMMD purchase. That's promo code TAKEBACK15 at amymyersmd.com. Welcome, Garrett. I am so excited to have you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes, we go way, way back, and we'll get into that story in a little bit, but it's great to see you in person in Austin.
I know. Wonderful to be here and see your office. It's my first time at this new building.
Yeah.
It's great.
So let's just dive into it. How did you get into what we're going to call electrical physiology?
Well, it's sort of the Venn diagram overlap of, you know, my background being in engineering and neuroscience, sort of where all those overlap. But the immediate catalyst was actually an experience I had back when I was an athlete. I was playing college ice hockey. I had some torn ligaments. I was supposed to have surgery and be out for a few months. And based on my previous experiences with, you know, traditional physical therapy, traditional orthopedic medicine, I just kind of figured that's how it would be. Thankfully, however, I met a doctor who was practicing functional neurology, which is looking not just at the injured tissue, but looking at how the nervous system responds to injury, how there might be guarding and inhibition, and how the autonomic nervous system is or is not, you know, working in a way that supports healing. So working with functional neurology and also working with older versions of direct current. And long story short, working with this doctor, I was able to heal my ligaments on their own in 2 to 3 weeks. I was able to avoid surgery. Wow. And I was thrilled as a hockey player, you know, to be able to get back out on the ice faster because that was my passion. And, you know, there's a lot of wonderful things there. But what really got me excited is going through this experience and finding something that actually made sense scientifically from first principles. And it was just such a sharp contrast to the previous experiences I had dealing with various injuries along the way. So when I found that, I just knew there was something about this that I really wanted to pursue, and somehow, in some way, you know, it would shape the path of my life. And it's, you know, now 17, 18 something years ago that happened, and it certainly has. But that experience is really what kind of launched me on this journey.
And when we met, you were actually getting your PhD, I believe. And what were you studying?
I was in a neuroscience program. I guess you could say I'm a PhD dropout.
Oh, it's okay. I think the path that you're on is much better. Actually, in fact, I think that was the advice I gave you way back when.
That's right. That's right. I got some excellent, excellent advice from you along the way, and in some very formative years when I was really deciding, you know, which direction to go and all that. Yes. So I'm very grateful to you.
Well, I'm grateful to you too. I'll share my story. We met, I was seeing my chiropractor and I was having some foot pain that he was unable to solve. And you were sharing some office space, you know, in his building. And so he sent me to you and we used something similar to what we'll get into now that you have invented, the Nubie at NuFit. And really within a couple of sessions, I was healed. And we'll get into it as we go. I now own one of your machines because it has kept me out of trouble. And when I can no longer get in to see you, it really has been a saving grace. So let's talk about Well, let's just, I guess, dive into it. You now have a company, New Fit, you've written a book, and you have this machine called a Newbie. So why don't you tell us what New Fit is, and then talk to us about the Newbie. What is it?
So when we talk about New Fit, the name of our business is neurology and fitness. And I believe that if you can really work with the nervous system and help the nervous system become resilient, robust, strong, powerful, that that is the foundation that underlies healing from any sort of recovering from any sort of trauma, injury, helping people achieve whatever goals they really want in this, you know, injury, pain, wellness, even sports performance realm. So we're trying to put the nervous system front and center. Newbie, the device, is an acronym for neurobioelectric stimulator. And so in terms of our business now, we are best known for the Newbie device. You know, I'm grateful to say we have a few patents on it. And for the last now, you know, 7 or so years that it's been out, I've been focused a lot on building out our education platform and training. Now we've trained a little over 3,000 people in how to use this device. So that's, you know, physical therapy clinics, that's athletic trainers with professional sports teams or universities, occupational therapists, chiropractors, a lot, you know, different professionals like that using it there. So it's been a cool journey to see how what we're doing in this, you know, little clinic in Austin has grown and multiplied and is now reaching far more people than, you know, we certainly ever could do just by ourselves.
Right. Well, I knew you'd be there. So tell me, you know, when people ask me, what is the New Fit? I have a hard time, or what is the Newbie? I have a hard time describing it other than to say that it is sort of like an e-stim machine, which I do believe, which you can explain to people who are not familiar, but I think many people have heard what an e-stim machine is. But I say it's an e-stim machine, but on steroids. So that's my simplistic way of doing it. Can you, I guess, first explain to people what is an e-stim machine and how is the Newbie different?
So it's a good comparison because there's overlap. There are also, though, as you said, some differences. I liken it to having a horse-drawn carriage and a, you know, modern-day Tesla or a Porsche or something, you know, a good car. You know, they're both methods of transportation, and so there's some overlap, but there's a lot more that you can do with this modern-day car than you can with a horse and buggy from the early 1900s. So the biggest difference between the Newbie and the traditional TENS units or interferential or what you might have seen in, you know, traditional modalities in PT clinics, chiropractic offices. The biggest difference is that we're able to use direct current versus virtually everything else that's out there is using alternating current. And there's a really interesting history here where the benefits of direct current, we didn't actually discover anything new. We're showing some evidence that I'll get into, you know, in terms of what direct current can do in humans and some kind of pioneering work there. But a lot of these benefits were actually known back in the 1960s, 1970s. The Soviets did a lot of work with direct current. But there was always this issue where when they turned it up to a high enough level to really create this progressive overload and adaptation within the nervous system, they would literally burn the skin of their athletes.
Oh, wow.
And so it was a case of the baby being thrown out with the bathwater. We couldn't do that over here in the West. And so the direct current essentially just got thrown out for decades. And in its place came these alternating current modalities. And that became sort of the standard of the technology. And there are some things you can do, but there's some also significant limitations. And there's two main categories of benefits to using direct current. One is that when you have direct current, you have this electric field, which is you create this gradient. So if you have a ball at the top of a hill, it's naturally going to roll down because of gravity. The same thing. If you have an electric field, charges are going to move, positive charges towards the negative terminal and vice versa. So charges are going to move in a way that causes cells to migrate. And these electric fields end up influencing the healing process. So it can help with growth and repair of bone, muscle, connective tissue, nerves. We actually just completed a study on neuropathy and we saw the direct head-to-head direct current versus alternating current, saw that we were able to help literally stimulate nerve regeneration in diabetic neuropathy patients in their 70s when it's been written off that they could ever heal in any meaningful way.
What, can I interrupt you there? What about neuropathy post-chemo treatment? Have you done anything with that?
So we haven't done, I mean, this was a very ambitious study with 150 subjects, mm-hmm. nothing yet to that scope, but anecdotally we've seen benefits for sure. Yeah. So, you know, it certainly is worthy of further study. And, you know, I think we'd love to have a similarly robust study on that.
And bone, you have study or just anecdotal evidence on bone? Is that after a fracture, after a bone break?
There's actually a really, a significant body of literature on using electrical stimulation for bone healing, for healing of non-union fractures. So that, we haven't done any specific work on that. We've seen anecdotally, again, you know, improvements there. And that's also piggybacking off of this very robust literature on using electrical stimulation for non-union, healing non-union fractures. So there's a good precedent for that.
And what about osteopenia or osteoporosis? Or is it more with a break?
More in terms of recovery from injury there. You know, there are some theoretical avenues by which we might be able to help, but we just haven't seen it yet. And I'm certainly not ready to make any claims about it. You know, there's possible connections. You know, bones are piezoelectric, meaning when you load them, they create electric fields. Mm-hmm. And that's what part of what triggers the, you know, body to lay down more minerals and strengthen the bone tissue. But, you know, it's still too early. I don't think we can have
any evidence there. So maybe impact with the newbie?
Perhaps.
You know, or weight bearing with the newbie?
One of the things, so on that topic, we have seen another couple of our first, you know, published studies is on the effects of the newbie on muscle hypertrophy. And we've seen that we can see, you know, approximately the same, very similar amounts of muscle growth using the newbie with no weight at all compared to traditional weightlifting exercise. So it can make that, you know, muscle growth building activities safer, more accessible to people who might not otherwise be able to do it, can be helpful for people with sarcopenia, stuff like this. So there's these excellent benefits there. Then the question becomes, and this is sort of the next question to answer, looking at, you know, by the way, we now have an actual PhD who runs our research program who's far better at it than I would have been. So it's a question for her that she'll tackle. But the question then is, okay, we have all these wonderful muscle building effects and performance effects. Does that also check the box, so to speak, of what resistance exercise does for stimulating bone density? And that's a question that is sort of one of the next ones we want to answer.
Right. Well, I tell people it literally is that machine that you could put on and sit and watch TV or read a book. And it really does exist out there. Now, I wish I could say that that's how I used it. I probably, you know, do actually go to the gym, but I did. I mean, you know, I then later, well, I still have a chronic degenerative hip, and you amongst many people have been someone that has dramatically helped me. And there were times where I could not do squats and kettlebell swings and many of the things that I used to do because of my hip. And so I would literally put the machine on and stand there and build muscle using the machine. And so I can attest to not having to do the squats and whatnot. Now I'm strong enough and I'm able to do those things without injuring myself. So, you know, I definitely appreciate that. But it is interesting, particularly as you know, many of the people that follow me have autoimmunity and many of them have degenerative, you know, diseases, MS, you know, various muscular degenerative diseases, and they are unable to exercise. And so this is an excellent way for people to, because it becomes that catch-22, right? I can't exercise, then I get weaker, and then, you know, things get harder, versus being able to use this machine, not be able to exercise, kind of like myself, build up your muscle, and then hopefully, depending on what's going on with you, be able to then actually get back out and exercise or exercise with the machine.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a good segue into, you know, just kind of this ongoing thread about the differences between direct current and alternating current, where there's this one category of benefits in terms of how the electric fields can influence tissue healing. And then the other main category of benefits has to do with the effect on the nervous system. And when you use an alternating current device, part of the reason that there's a low ceiling on what you can accomplish is that that signal, as think of alternating current, meaning alternates, goes back and forth, positive, negative. So you're getting a signal to contract muscles on both sides of your joint, both sides of your body. So again, if we're going back to a car metaphor, it's like you're driving your car, hitting the throttle and the brake pedal at the same time. You're training your body to resist its own movements. And there are some significant limitations to that, especially if you're talking about someone who has some sort of neurodegenerative condition where it already takes a lot of energy, takes more energy than the average person just to get up and move. If you're having to spend extra energy overcoming that additional internal resistance, there's actually a significant cost to that. And so training the body to move more efficiently, to actually bypass that back and forth, bypass those protective contractions, both autonomic and literally mechanical protective contractions, bypass that and get more sensory input into the nervous system is how then we can create that signal. Because if we're talking about about strength and movement. It's ultimately the nervous system that controls what the muscles do. So being able to get that signal into the nervous system to help repattern, re-educate, neuromuscular re-education is sort of this umbrella term, be able to re-educate and retrain those neurological pathways or the nervous system to be able to send the right signals allows for these wonderful improvements in strength. And of course, if you can activate a muscle more effectively, then you can use it more and you can trigger it to build and you can get the hypertrophy and the tissue building effects too. So good segue into just kind of finishing.
And so, yeah, back to that. And so some of the other things that I understand is through talking with you is it's also not only contracting the muscle, but also lengthening the muscle. And then is there something also part of this getting more blood flow into all of the tissues as well?
So the blood flow piece of it, absolutely. That's part of, you know, how tissues heal and part of the why people, you know, recover faster when they're using this.
But how's the blood flow getting there? The current is driving more blood flow there?
So there's two parts of it. One is the current can be creating mechanical contractions that help the pumping of blood and lymph and other fluids. And then the other is that the autonomic nervous system controls a lot of, you know, blood vessel constriction and dilation and things like that. So we're getting more activation of the autonomic nervous system, especially especially in people with chronic pain and different things where they have excess, they're kind of in overdrive sympathetic nervous system. Mm-hmm. We can help them downregulate that, get more parasympathetic activity. So there's going to be less vasoconstriction from the sympathetic nervous system. So if someone's stressed, you know, oftentimes their hands might get cold, right? Mm-hmm. And that's because we're reduced their vasoconstriction, constricting blood vessels, reducing blood flow to the hands. If you can get more parasympathetic activation, you get more blood flow and the hands warm up. So it's just an example, but we're able to help create that sort of effect throughout the body. So that's part of it. And then to that other piece of, you know, helping to preferentially relax or contract muscles. That's one of the cool things here. With that alternating current signal, you're always getting that contraction where muscles are fighting against each other, as long as it's high enough to where you're getting your overload to get adaptation, right? So with this, we actually, part of what's in one of our patents, for example, is the ability to switch settings. So in here would be like switching frequency, for example, switching settings. So you can preferentially lengthen or relax tissue, or you can contract it more. And you can, at all settings, there's some overlap. So it's a little bit, it's not necessarily a binary as much as it is a continuum. But you can, at some settings, work on a lot more. If you're working on if someone who has spasticity, for example, and you're wanting to really teach them to relax muscles or increase mobility, lengthen out, you can use those settings and that preferentially get that effect. If you're wanting to build muscle or work on strength or activation in certain range of motion, these other settings can help you, you know, preferentially do more of that.
And that seems kind of, you know, you have a location here, New Fit in Austin, and I know, and we'll get into this, that you have practitioners, as you've mentioned, that are PT, maybe physicians all around the country now that have your machines and are using the machines. It seems like that there are kind of two main tracks. One is people who are coming to you for muscle building. I mean, whenever I'm in there, there are these very, very, you know, beefy men and women with lots of muscle and don't necessarily have any injuries. And they're there really just to build muscle. And then there are the people like myself who came, you know, because mine was acute at the time. Well, I've come to you for acute and chronic conditions. So it seems like there's this people with acute and chronic pain and then people who aren't necessarily in pain at all. Can you kind of speak to the different types of people who might utilize this and that you've seen utilize this?
Yeah, it's a great topic. And it's interesting, you know, when I talk, sometimes it seems overly broad, the types of people or the types of conditions with which this sort of approach can help. But there is a common thread throughout all that. I think it's important to kind of talk about that first. The common thread is the nervous system. And it's how the nervous system responds to acute injury in an athlete, or how the nervous system might be beginning to shut down muscles in a, you know, quote unquote aging athlete or someone who wants to train and stay active as they get into their 40s or 50s, but it's more difficult because these aches and pains, you know, make it difficult to maintain a consistent regimen. And then there's also the neurodegenerative patients, you know, someone recovering from a stroke or MS or who has these ongoing issues with autoimmunity. So there's a common thread throughout all that, and that is the nervous system. And when we're talking about these people who are coming in more for wanting to build muscle, some of these benefits we talked about in that hypertrophy study, a lot of times the benefit there is you know, when people have been training for a while, a lot of times these injuries catch up with them, and you know, they'll go and work out, have a couple of good workouts, and then be injured, and they won't be able to go back to the gym for 3 or 4 weeks, or they'll have to figure out how to train around that injury. And it becomes very difficult to accumulate progress. And we know how important muscle is for aging gracefully. We know how effective it is, you know, helping with the metabolism, helping keeping inflammation under control, all these hormones, right? All these wonderful things that you know even better than I do. And it becomes difficult if you're injured, you know, to really do the work that's necessary just to maintain, because use it or lose it definitely applies even mm-hmm. more as one gets older, even more if one has a neurodegenerative condition. So use it or lose it definitely applies. It becomes even more difficult just to do that minimum amount of work to maintain, let alone to try to build new muscle if that's what someone wants to do. So being able to come in and lift less weight, have less risk of injury, and get the same or more benefit is a really valuable proposition for people in that demographic. So, you know, it's can be more time efficient, more effective, safer. There's a lot of benefits there in that population. And then when we're talking about injury, you know, if someone's been in chronic pain and they've tried 10 other things and it hasn't worked, I mean, there sometimes is an element of desperation, and helping people who are in that type of situation is just profound. And that's something that, you know, when you hear some of those stories, and literally bring a tear to my eye and give me the chills to hear some of those stories.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Is there one or two, you know, success stories that really, you know, that you hold dear, that you want to share with us?
There's a few. I mean, there's a few that, you know, with professional athletes who have given us permission to talk about and stuff like that, and some of which are in my book here. There's actually one in the book, though, a woman that we worked with who had CRPS, complex regional pain syndrome, which is similar bucket as fibromyalgia, but literally so bad for her that she was in trade school to become a barber. And she had to withdraw from school because she was bedridden for all but an hour or two every day. So literally it was so bad that the sensation of water in the shower on some days, that sensation on her skin might make her vomit. Wow. And this is called the suicide disease because the pain is so bad. There's maybe it's like a 50 point pain scale. They say, you know, childbirth is around so I say in the low 40s, the numbers are a little bit off. This disease is like high 40s. It's like even worse than that. You know, so just really debilitating. And it's often triggered by a seemingly innocuous injury. Like for her, she had some sort of foot injury that, you know, you expect would heal and be fine. But in these patients, these seemingly innocuous injuries, they start to heal. And all of a sudden there's this trigger where the sympathetic nervous system just goes into overdrive, and they start protecting as if they're just being attacked again at every mm-hmm. moment. It goes into this just way off the charts, crazy reaction, hyper reaction. And so with these types of patients, there's essentially two things that we'd like to do. One is we want to try to globally downregulate that sympathetic fight or flight activity within the nervous system. And then we want to locally find where their nervous system is guarding and protecting, because pain is very interesting. Pain is a signal the brain creates. So it's like a fire alarm. And a lot of people, you know, if they have pain, they want to take ibuprofen or something like that, right, which is basically just turning off the fire alarm instead of actually finding where the smoke is coming from and putting out the fire. And so we would take one of the electrodes, for example, and scan around on the patient's body and find where exactly their nervous system is perceiving that threat, where the fire is actually coming from, and then stimulate that area to teach their brain that it can start to handle input, handle signal from there, essentially a form of desensitization. And then by working globally and locally, oftentimes it can help make a difference. And in this woman's case, she, about 7 or 8 sessions in, she came back in. There was this wonderful moment at our old office where I was sitting at the front with a couple other colleagues just hanging out, you know, when she came in, and she said, comes in and says, "Hey guys, guess what?" "What?" "Okay." She said, "I'm going back to school." And she literally was up and about. She would drive in an hour for her sessions. And initially she had to have, you know, someone drive her. Now she could drive herself. She was going back to, it just gave her life back.
Yeah.
And these types of stories.
I have goosebumps. Yeah. It's incredible.
It's really profound.
Yeah. Awesome. So, what does it feel like?
I could pose the same question to you, but
yeah, because, you know, I know what it feels like.
So it feels like sort of electrical buzzing. And then, sometimes it'll make muscles twitch or contract, depending on the setting or depending on where it is and stuff like that. So there's this sort of baseline buzzing. Most people find that just baseline sensation pleasant or neutral. Every once in a while, someone will say it's uncomfortable.
I'm just sorry. I'm remembering all of the time. So I would always only see Garrett personally. And that little evil smile that he has right there, you would turn up the machine when you were scanning. And it would be like jumping off the table. But scanning's a different thing than actually using the machine.
So yeah.
If you go, don't go to Garrett. Do you see that evil smile? I think he has a little,
It is for the greater good.
Yes, sure.
Of your recovery.
Right.
So there's this baseline electrical sensation. And then what we're looking for, especially on that scanning, is we're looking for areas where, if we're scanning over an area where it's healthy, 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 your brain or the patient's brain will see that and say, okay, we're loading these tissues just the same as if we're stretching or if we're moving or lifting something. The brain will see that and say, oh, that's just Amy being Amy, or that's just us doing our thing. There's nothing alarming or threatening about that. No reason to really be concerned at all. But then if we stimulate an area either where the brain is actively trying to govern and limit output in that area because of a recent injury, or we're stimulating an area that because of bad habits over time, someone's been avoiding. If there's something novel and new, the brain all of a sudden sees that and says, whoa, 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 what is that? Alarm, alarm bells, alarm bells. And that's, it'll basically feel like a trigger point. But that's what we're looking for. So we're looking for those areas where we scan around and you say, ooh, that's a spot. And it's not pleasant in the moment, but it's cool and it's a productive because it helps us know exactly where we need to go. Where's the bullseye of this problem? Trying to, take similar approach that you do with functional medicine. We're trying to go upstream and find the cause here in the musculoskeletal system rather than in the biochemistry of the immune system. But when we find that spot, then that helps us know where we need to stimulate in order to make these neurological changes to help people recover faster, feel better, et cetera.
And the interesting thing to me was, I came in with this foot problem, but often where you were putting the pads were not on my foot at all, which I imagine is something that happens frequently, that you're scanning somewhere. And again, as you said, it's this downstream problem that someone, which kind of equates to conventional medicine, right? You walk in, you say, I have reflux. Someone gives you this pill, for that reflux instead of saying, well, where did the reflux come from? Oh, you have a parasite or, oh, you have a gluten sensitivity. Let's get rid of that. Everywhere I was going to the podiatrist, to all of these feet people, when really the problem was upstream in my leg and my SI joint and not as much down in my foot.
And that sometimes people come in expecting, if your back hurts, they want you to come and rub on their back or put pads on their back, or same thing with the foot, rub on the foot, put pads on their foot. And so we have to be, artful and effective in how we explain what's going on. So when we can find those clear hot spots, that's helpful because someone can kind of viscerally understand, oh yeah, there's an issue there. It's probably worth pursuing. But it's up to us also to educate people to say, like, look, we're here to try to achieve a result, right? We're trying to help you reduce your foot pain or your whatever pain you came in with. So what we're going to do is we're going to go through our process. We're going to try this. If we're doing our job right, we expect to see some improvement, and that'll vary depending on the circumstances. But if we're doing our job right, we expect to see some improvement. If we don't see that improvement, then, we want to try the next thing, or maybe it's a case where we'd have to refer out for imaging or something like that. But oftentimes when we go through that process, applying the 80-20 principle or something, these 20% of techniques and activities help 80 or 90% of people notice improvements even in the first visit. I know your foot wasn't 100% in the first visit, but we at least made some progress where you were motivated to want to come back. And thankfully that's a common response where people tend to see that progress. And so that ultimately, sort of the proof is in the pudding sort of thing. If people feel better, then they understand, they're motivated, they want to come back and continue on.
And I suppose it depends on why someone's coming, but is there a rule of thumb? This is something you can do every day. This is something that you should do, give your body a break and do every other day, once a week. I know you mentioned this woman traveling an hour to see you. So does it really depend on what's going on, or how often should somebody be doing this, and is there too much of a good thing can be a bad thing type of situation?
There's definitely a range, and I can talk about the average, but just it's kind of interesting and fun to talk about some of the end cases. So if we're talking about an elite athlete, say someone is trying to get ready for the Super Bowl and has a sprained ankle, and they just sprained an ankle in the NFC Championship game, and they have 2 weeks to get ready, but it's normally a 6 or 8 week injury. Well, we can work with that athlete 2 or 3 times a day. And that's just basically, you know, they're used to extreme training loads and challenging themselves and having to recover. And that's a full-time job. So we can throw all that stimulus at them and gosh darn it, have a good chance of getting them ready for the Super Bowl. So that's kind of the extreme case, you know, 2 or 3 times a day. The other case is someone who experiences extreme fatigue, and we just have to essentially treat them with kid gloves and ramp up very slowly, safely, methodically, very logically, just step by step. You know, the average person, though, that comes in, you know, average person is going to be ideally doing 2 or 3 sessions a week, because the stimulus here is going to be great enough. It's going to be like, you know, the equivalent of having a good workout, where you're going to create an effect. You want to have then that, you know, 24 to 48 hours to recover afterwards, because the rebuilding and the adaptation doesn't happen during the training, but it happens during the subsequent recovery period, especially during sleep. And so having the nutrients, having the right strategies, being able to sleep well for a night or two in between is going to be a big deal to help someone adapt and recover and come back stronger, so they can then, you know, get higher on the machine in the next session, reach, you know, new milestones each session, or just, you know, whenever the appropriate progression is. So that's usually sort of the you know, average case type of thing, where people are usually coming in on those typical physical therapy type 2 to 3 times per week cadences.
And speaking of the Super Bowl, I've been watching that documentary Quarterbacks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I've seen hyperbaric machines. I've seen saunas. I've seen chiropractic. I've seen ice bath, but I've not seen a new fit. So we need to get, you know, and Patrick Mahomes owns a home in Westlake. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah. So we have got to get the word out to him. So Patrick, if you happen to be listening to the Take Back Your Health with Dr. Amy Myers, you've got to know Garrett and get one of these machines.
So a couple of his teammates actually have their own, and we work with, one of his offensive linemen just reshared a social media post of him using the newbie actually. So that's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's
what Wikipedia said. I don't know if it's true, but they said that he owns some article I was reading that they have a house in Westlake.
Dang, I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
So one interesting thing, one of the quarterbacks that's featured this year. So this current, you know, we're recording this at the beginning of 2024. So for the 2023 season, when they were filming, there might be some footage. There was some footage captured with it. I don't know if it's going to make the cut and be in the show, but I'm hopeful that it will be.
Okay, good. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, how can you argue when, you know, the top athletes in the country, if not the world, are using things like hyperbarics and ice baths, you know? I mean, they need to recover and reduce inflammation very quickly.
Yeah.
So, you know, I personally was very excited to see, you know, them showing these various modalities on the show.
It was a great show, really. You got to watch it and enjoy it. Well, we're talking about, you know, NFL too. I'll share one story. So Saquon Barkley is a fairly well-known running back, plays for the New York Giants, really incredible athlete. And, you know, he's given us permission. We have some videos together and given us permission to share his story. So he had an ACL surgery, and he, you know, of course, is working with, you know, wonderful people and everything. And yet he was frustrated because at 5 or 6 months after his surgery, he was stalled and he was still having issues. So he worked with a surgeon in LA named Dr. Elitrosh, who, you know, does all these big name pro athletes. And he has this 50-point lower extremity functional scale. And so in, you know, 5 or 6 months, Saquon was still at like 23 or 24 on that scale. He then did his first session on the newbie, and he said, man, I can feel my VMO wake up for the first time, you know, one of the quad muscles, feel like it's actually turning on for the first time, you know, since the surgery. Made, you know, significant progress in those first 7 or 8 weeks with the device, went back and retested and got a 49.
Wow.
So it changed the trajectory of his recovery from, you know, slow up to just.
How did he find out about you?
A physical therapist in LA that uses our machine, who's actually a wonderful guy, works with a lot of high-end entertainers and athletes. He had used it on him. And then Saquon reached out to him when he was like, man, you know, I'm stalled. What do you got? He's like, well, remember that machine? And, you know, he connected us.
Okay, cool. Yeah. And you've mentioned a lot about the parasympathetic nervous system and the machine really affecting that. Is that a natural effect no matter where? I mean, we haven't really discussed that there are cords that come out of the machine and there are 8 different pads that you can use. And so is that an effect of just having these pads on you no matter where it is? Or is this something that you need to have a specific placement to the vagal nerve or something in order to impact your parasympathetic nervous system?
There's a couple different ways that this can go and that we can influence the autonomic nervous system. So one is we have something that we call the master reset, which is essentially our version of a vagus nerve stimulation protocol. And that will, we've seen with heart rate variability measurements, you know, if you just lie down, so we use, I have this Whoop on and people have wearables and stuff, but we also in the clinic, the Oura Ring, exactly. So, you know, we also have this wrist cuff device that's actually measuring electrical activity, you know, clinical grade heart rate variability. So we'll do these before and after measurements, and and we've done some pilot data here and are looking to publish something in this regard as well. But the, you know, if you lie down and do diaphragmatic breathing for 10 to 20 minutes, your heart rate variability will increase, and that's wonderful. If you do acupuncture, your heart rate variability will increase, and that's wonderful. If you use this master reset protocol, whatever would happen normally just lying down and doing diaphragmatic breathing, the increase that we see with the master reset is 3 or 4 times more significant in terms of increased heart rate variability. So heart rate variability, you know, by the way, is a proxy for looking at the parasympathetic nervous system. You want it to be higher because that tells you you're more parasympathetic, less fight or flight, more rest and digest. So that protocol, I mean, that's amazing. So
is that the pads on your base of your skull and then the bottom of your feet?
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So you lie down with that on, you know, do diaphragmatic breathing, but you have that on, and that, you know, there's interesting effects locally. The nerves on, you know, the bottoms of the feet are so neurologically dense. And then the back of the neck, you're also getting the brainstem where the vagus nerve emanates from. And there's so many mechanoreceptors there. So there's local, but then you also have this global effect of these direct current electric fields throughout the entire length of the body, and, you know, some cool things happening. But the net result is this significant increase in heart rate variability. So there's that. If we want to be very directed at that particular outcome, we're doing the master reset. We also see effects. If we're doing a more intense rehabilitation or training session, you actually do want to have some ramp up of the sympathetic nervous system, because that's how we mobilize energy to meet an immediate challenge. The thing is, though, that oftentimes people, the way that they train, they end up training themselves to get better and better at being in that state. They don't create enough of a gradient to turn on that then triggers the rebound effect to turn off and recover afterwards. So with the newbie and the protocol, the NewFit method and protocols that we have, we're able to create, yes, a temporary increase in sympathetic, but we tend to see greater rebounds in terms of ramping down and that subsequent boost in heart rate variability, you know, the next night of sleep on someone's wearable device or things like that too. So there's the kind of more direct immediate approach, and then there's the delayed approach. But generally speaking, we're seeing higher, regardless of which approach we're taking, higher, greater improvements in heart rate variability and greater effects on the autonomic nervous system because of how directly and powerfully we are communicating with the nervous system.
And that's great. I was going to ask you about those, you know, vagus nerve stimulators that, you know, starting to see online and that people have kind of handheld devices. Another thing that I have seen is, I don't know what it's called. I've not done anything to my face. But there is some type of, you know, it's something to be, instead of Botox or instead of plastic surgery, is going and it looks like they're putting some sort of pad, almost like a NewFit, on their face. I don't know if maybe it's called NewFace. I don't know what it's called. Maybe you know.
I'm not sure.
There's something popping up, and you see various people online, and they've gone and put these pads all over their face. Do you all have a protocol or a usage for that?
So there is a this category. I'm not sure the brand and stuff like that,
exactly.
But this category would be called like a microcurrent facial.
Right. Okay.
And so, so we do have.
That's how out of it I am with all the facial stuff. But yes.
I could probably use one.
Well, in my mid 50s now, I definitely don't want to do anything artificial. So
with this, there is, you can't, there's microcurrent settings that we can do. We do a lot of work with microcurrent. So there would be overlap, and the mechanisms would have to do with things like increasing blood flow, reducing muscle tone, or increasing muscle tone if you need to, but also having effects on collagen production, which electrical current can do. So there should be, I'm not able to or necessarily prepared to make any specific claims here, but if we're looking at what some of these microcurrent devices can do, I'm confident we could do the same types of settings and same types of effects.
I want those when we're done, please. Yeah.
We'll do a little bit of research after this.
Yeah, I want those settings, please. So, I think I've had my machine for, maybe 5 years now? When did the machine come out?
2017.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Almost 7 years. So I've had it probably for at least six. So any new technology in the machine or anything new coming out? Has it changed over the last 6 years?
So the core technology is the same. I think there's a few different things. I mean, one is for us, the biggest opportunity for growth is really taking this core technology and sharing it with more and more people.
Yes.
At the same time though, we identify as an innovative company, right? And we're always trying to see ways to improve. And so yes, we're working on the technology. So for us, some of the biggest things that we're working on now are finding ways to miniaturize it.
That's what I was going to ask.
Increase some of the ranges of settings and different things we can do with it. We're also always refining the methodology. I mentioned we have this woman on our leadership team who has a PhD in neuroscience. So she's been collaborating with various research partners, and through that work and all this other clinical work, we've been putting out more continuing education courses, mostly for practitioners rather than individual users, but education courses on specifically how to treat various neurological diagnoses or sports medicine and muscle hypertrophy, these different topics that we've talked about here. So we're, growing and evolving in these different directions, technology, methodology, education, always trying to grow.
Do you think that a travel size one will be coming out at any point?
At some point, I think it will.
Okay. Well, I mean, I travel with mine. It fits in a carry-on suitcase. So yeah. I can't say it's been around the world with me, but my new Fit has seen some sights.
Awesome.
Let me just say that.
Awesome.
I just honestly take it if I can as a preventative measure. And the only reason I don't have it here now is I really only wanted to do, one carry-on. So, but I definitely do travel back and forth with it. So, it sounds like there are many different practitioners across the country. So how can people, obviously, if they're local to Austin, they can look up New Fit, come see you guys in your home headquarters. How can people find other practitioners across the country if they're interested in trying this out?
The best place to do that would be our website, which is www.new.fit. We do now also own newfit.com if people go there, but neu.fit for NEU for neurological. And then there's a link that says for patients and a directory of, should be up to date, several hundred locations, certainly in the U.S. And then now we have some popping up in Canada, some in Australia, a couple in Mexico, as there's different distributors that are doing some training and distribution in those countries. So that's the best place to look. If there is not anyone near you, if you have a physical therapist who might be interested, of course, we'd love to talk to them. But we also have a team of our own therapists that support people remotely, where sometimes it makes sense, if you're traveling, like you said, you have your own device for a variety of reasons. But sometimes for people, even if it's for a window to recover from a surgery, or if they're working on something longer term, like trying to restore function after a stroke or after losing some function because of MS or something like that, sometimes working at home remotely is an option as well. But we certainly recommend seeing a practitioner if that's possible as a first choice.
And do you all still do the rental where someone can rent a machine and work with one of your physical therapists? Or
we have some options like that, yeah. And those are depending on circumstances. I think the best thing to do, also through the website, there's a page to contact us and talk through you know, what might make sense, because sometimes that would make the most sense. Just depends on the circumstances.
And what type of training does someone go through if they're going to see another practitioner at another location in another state? What type of training will that practitioner have gone through in order to, you know, operate this machine?
So it is a medical device. And so before anyone would ever, you know, get to us for our training, they're going to either be themselves a physical therapist, a chiropractor, or they're going to be, you know, an more experienced layperson, like a personal trainer or something, but only working underneath the license of somebody else. There is this, you know, medical licensure requirement. And so there's going to be some of these things in place. So, you know, it's going to be a trusted licensed person to begin with. And then once they work with us, they go through our certification program. So it's, you know, 20 hours or so worth of content just to really get started, get the basics down. It's that many hours. That includes some time to practice.
And is that but it's in person, or can people do that online, or that's they fly to Austin and do that in person?
It used to be flying to Austin, and we had a lot of those, and those are very wonderful. And then with COVID, that was probably one of the blessings, in the sense that I honestly do miss doing those courses in person and connecting with people, but it's made it a lot more accessible now. So we put it all online. You know, people watch the videos, they practice, they send in, do a little bit of an exam and send in a video of them doing, you know, some techniques also to pass and complete the certification, so we can have some sort of vetting process. But it has been overall a net positive to put online, because people, they don't have to wait for the next one. They don't have to travel to Austin. They don't have to take time out of, you know, they can watch it on their schedule. And it's been very effective to get people up and running. And then we have a more other advanced focused courses in our curriculum. If people want to go down more of the sports path, or more working with neurological patients, these different specializations too.
Great. Is there anything you feel like we haven't covered that you want to say about NewFit or the newbie?
I mean, we covered a lot of good bases. I do think this notion that we talked about a little bit of, you know, pain, I think it's probably worth another mention, maybe even from a slightly different angle of, you know, when you're talking about functional medicine, trying to get to the root cause, I really think that there is an analogous, almost virtually identical path when
Absolutely.
We're talking about injury, dysfunction, anything in the musculoskeletal system. And so I think understanding that pain is a signal, also fatigue is a signal. There's different, you know, these different things there, and figuring out, you know, doing that same sort of approach and same sort of detective work to figure out why one is experiencing this pain or this limitation, and then having a powerful enough tool. You know, sometimes you have to pull out the big guns and go after SIBO or something like that. Sometimes we have to pull out the big guns and go after this nervous system thing. But if you can play detective and sort of have the right framework and then the right tools, you know, you can solve the problem.
Do you have anybody on your team talking to people about, you know, diet and getting off inflammatory processed foods, anything like that?
So there's an interesting opportunity there. I mean, we do some, but probably not enough, because obviously, you know, even better than I do how important that is. You know, if people are having chronic pain, our PTs would talk to them about various lifestyle parameters. If people are coming in for training, you know, we'll talk to them about recovery. No one on our team, you know, at least here in Austin, some clinics may also have a dietitian, or may do more sophisticated health coaching or something like that. At our, you know, just speaking for our clinic, you know, we're at least talking to people about the basics, having those conversations during a session about key lifestyle things, about sleep, hydration, nutrition, just some of the big, you know, some of the big levers, not necessarily getting too far into the details. There's a really interesting opportunity where I mentioned this neuropathy study where we're going to have some, you know, have this, you know, essentially neuropathy program. And in that, I think there's a really big, especially for people who have, you know, diabetic neuropathy, mm-hmm. right? When there's these different metabolic issues, and lifestyle obviously is an even more important part of it. And also we work with a lot of MS patients, you know, through Dr. Walls, who you connected us with, right? So all the, you know, so in those cases, I think more of a complete package type of treatment, you know, a kitchen sink approach where we're using the newbie, but we're also dialing in the lifestyle factors, I think is even more important there. And so that's something we're, you know, kind of looking at for how we can launch a more complete neuropathy program as well when that study gets published.
Right. Well, before we part ways, I always like to ask every guest, you know, what are three things that you can think of that you could let our guests know that they can do to take back their health today?
Ooh. Well, read Amy's books.
Not to do with me. Come on.
I'd say one of the biggest...
What are three things you tell your patients?
I'd say the biggest lever that I would pull for many people is probably circadian biology, paying attention to, you know, light, timing of sleep and meals, light exposure in the morning, you know, reducing blue light at night, when we're eating more calories earlier in the day. That to me, you know, in my own life has made a big positive difference, and I think is sort of low hanging fruit that can help a lot of people. I would say, you know, treat exercise like medicine. When we have, you know, if you get prescribed medicine, you need the right type, you need the right dose, you need to take it at the right frequency, right? And this, all those same things apply to exercise. And then I would say, you know, always have a goal in mind, always be building towards something. So, you know, for me, I'm not a competitive or not, you know, not even close to a professional athlete anymore, but I'm...
Thought you were saying weren't competitive.
I am competitive. So I find a way, you know, have goals, different things I want to work on, you know, just going back to my number two and looking at exercise, you know, things that I'm working towards that, you know, gives me some excitement. And when I'm exercising, you know, it causes me to dig a little deeper, push a little harder, pay attention a little more precisely. So I think those are my top three off the cuff.
Okay. So circadian rhythms and exercise and having a goal. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, you want to tell listeners where they can find you?
Yes. So social media, we are most active on Instagram. For the last, you know, 7 or 8 years of having NewFit, I've mostly used our business page as my personal page. So NewFit RFP for Rehab Fitness and Performance. I also just this year, just in the last few weeks, started a personal page for the first time on Instagram. It's my first and last name, Garrett.Salpeter. And, you know, please follow us there if you're on social media. And then our website is www.new.fit. The book is available on Amazon, The NewFit Method. And then I also have a podcast, which you graciously appeared on.
Yes.
On a recent episode called the NewFit Undercurrent Podcast, available on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, all those channels.
Well, thanks so much, Garrett, for spending time with us. This was great to catch up and hopefully helpful for all our listeners. So I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's an honor.
Thanks. Take care.
Thank you for listening. To read the full show notes for each episode, which include a summary, timestamp, quotes, and any resources mentioned, please visit amymyersmd.com/podcast. Lastly, if you've enjoyed this episode, I'd love if you would leave a rating and a review on Apple or Spotify, and we'll select a few to read out loud in a future episode. Tune in next week to hear from another inspiring guest as we help you take back your health.